back, everybody. It is the Tim Conway Jr. Show live at 97.1 Free FM. And a awfully dismal, dark day in the San Fernando Valley. They're still pulling bodies out of that train wreck up in Chatsworth. And a commuter train at 420, around 420-ish, hit a Union Pacific train. And so far, at least 20 people have died. And now with the latest from CBS, the main anchor over at CBS Channel 2, and a guy who's awfully nice to come on with us every once in a while. Ladies and gentlemen, Paul Majors, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Tim. How are you?
All right. Bad vibes today in the Valley,
well,
huh?
Just a horrible situation. Yeah. You know, when we first started covering this, it happened, that, as you said, right around 420. I think the authorities pegged that right at 423. The commuter train, the 111, which always runs on that Ventura line right there, its end destination was Moore Park. Apparently, it's coming around this curve, and we spoke to a guy who lives right there. In fact, was in his backyard, and, you know, looked up at the train, and he said it was moving. Typically, because of that curve, he said they traveled about 20 or 25 miles an hour right there. And he says, and he's looking at the train, when all of a sudden he hears this horrific explosion, and the train just sort of shudders. And he said, actually, like, you know, wheels aren't really rolling. The train is just sort of skidding like another 20 or 30 feet.
Oh, man.
And he was one of the first guys to run right out there. And a huge, huge explosion with a mushroom cloud going up. And then, of course, you had diesel fuel everywhere. And that's burning. There was a as you probably know by now, we know there are 10 confirmed dead. That it's probably going to end up closer to 20, like you just pointed out. There was an LAPD officer on board, uniformed, heading home from work. He apparently used it all the time. There was also he's dead. There was also a deputy sheriff, LA County deputy sheriff on board. And he was slightly injured, not seriously injured, but he apparently was the guy that got the ball rolling. You know, he called this thing in so quickly.
Wow.
You know, so the firefighters, the first responders got there, and they put that fire out pretty darn quickly, because we were on the air when that fire was still burning. We were watching them put that out. You know, had they not gotten there that quickly, Tim, this thing could have been so much worse. Or this situation as well, which I didn't realize until Gary Lineberry at News Trapper 2 pointed this out. Much of those trains are typically, they can run like a mile long.
Right.
And much of that train was back. There's a tunnel just around the other side, around that corner.
Right.
And that's where much of that train was. Can you imagine, as horrific and disastrous as this is, if that would have taken place inside that tunnel?
Yeah, no, that would have been hundreds.
Oh, my God, Tim, it would have just been just horrible.
Jesus Christ.
So here they are. So we're watching, and Pat Harvey was on with me, and I kept looking at Pat because I'm looking at the aerials, and I said, Pat, you know, I only see one track. I'm thinking something happened. You know, they brushed each other or something. You know, something went wrong, right? In this day and age, Tim, how do two trains, you know, they share the tracks, Union Pacific and Metrolink, right?
Right.
But how do they end up on the same track?
Jeez, I have no idea. But I know that Metrolink owns the right-of-way to that track. And so, you know, it must have been, you know, there was some theory that the conductor couldn't see, you know, but the sun going down, couldn't see the red light.
Couldn't read the signal. So it's either human error or a switching error. Now, these trains, both the Metrolink train and the Union Pacific train, they both have, in effect, what amount to black boxes, like an airplane.
Right.
So everything that happened on board those trains and those black boxes, you know, will survive. They will be recovered. So there should be pretty good data on there. And then I also learned today and tonight that they also have digital computer information about all the switches, all the signals, you know, what was doing what at what time. Now, it may take them a while to, you know, recover all of this data and analyze the data. But it's just shocking to me, not knowing much about trains, how this happens.
Yeah, well, you know, after it did happen, there was, you know, there's a million stories that have come out of it, and one that that'll stick with me for a long time, especially if I ever take a train, is somebody who was on that train worked for Amtrak, and he survived without a cut or a bruise, because his theory is, and I guess it works, you sit in the last car facing backwards, and that's how you survive a lot of this crap.
You know what? I agree with sitting in the last car. That's where a lot of those people they were ambulatory. They just climbed right out of the train. They were dazed, obviously, and some had, you know, injuries, and some of the injuries, you know, were more than just slight. But as far as I like the fact that he said, you know, and face the other way.
Right.
Literally, that's the way the seats should be configured on airplanes.
Oh, yeah.
We shouldn't face forward. We should be facing the other way.
Exactly.
That's
yeah.
what offers you the most protection.
Yeah. Now, yeah, and then you have to just guess when the lavatory is empty.
We have a guy that we have interviewed, and this has been confirmed to us. There's a guy on the train tonight, this afternoon, who survived the Glendale.
Wow.
Disaster.
And he was on this train?
Yes.
Holy Christ.
He was in both disasters.
Oh, man. That guy from now on has to wear just a bright orange jumpsuit and so people can know when he's on that train.
Yeah, exactly.
Hold on, man.
Exactly right.
God almighty.
I know. Isn't that amazing?
You know, and I heard a story that, you know, once the trains did hit, that a lot of people in the area sort of panicked. A lot of people, the neighbors went to, you know, help the survivors. And that Ralph's is right below, right at the bottom of that hill. And the first thing that they did is they took a bunch of their employees and loaded them up with water and food and took it up to the area.
Yeah, you know what? That entire neighborhood was pitching in. And that, I mean, we had stories after story after that. And trust me, we're going to hear more of these. But everybody did. I mean, people, you know, in the neighborhood, but a long way away from what they saw with, you know, the little mushroom cloud, you know, just scrambling there to do what they could to, you know, to help those poor people who, you know, suffered this tragic situation.
Now, do they know how many people for sure were on this train?
222. It had a capacity of 350.
Wow. Jesus.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, you know, it's every time I'm on a train, I never think of it crashing. You know, there's not even seatbelts.
No,
I don't think there's seatbelts on it. And, but, you know, you think it's too big. There's no way it could crash. And then when something like this happens, you're like, oh, Christ, now I got to fear this mode of transportation as well.
Well, and the energy that must have been spent in this collision, that freight train, just the engine, that thing weighs 400,000 pounds.
Wow.
The Metrolink engine is half of that. I mean, that's why that Metrolink engine, Tim, is just, it's obliterated.
Oh, yeah.
It is just obliterated.
Do they know how fast they were going when they hit?
Well, like I mentioned, I had the Metrolink train, that guy who lives right there that we had on the air, we interviewed him on the air, he told me, he said, because of that curve there, they tend to slow down. He says, typically, he said, they go through the 20 to 25 miles an hour. And he said, just, you know, looking up today and seeing the 111, he said to himself, you know, it was going the normal rate. I don't know how fast that freight train was going,
yeah,
but Tim, it had to be moving.
Yeah, well, I mean, even if they're both going 25, that's a pretty good collision.
Yeah, pretty good impact.
You know, 50 miles an hour.
And, you know, one of the first things when you know, we're over it, and I'm looking, and I don't see, you know, an engine on the Metrolink train, right?
Right.
So I'm thinking to myself right away, and I said this on the air. I said, I asked Gary Lineberry up in News Chopper 2. I said, Gary, do you see the engine? He goes, well, I'm trying to figure it all out. You know, there's smoke and everything. And then a short while later, we had a woman on from Metrolink, spokesperson for Metrolink. And I asked her, is this a push-pull situation? You know, well, what's the deal? Is this the train being pulled? And she says, right away, she says, yeah, because remember, that was such a big controversy
sure,
in the
yeah.
Glendale incident back in January 2005, because that thing was being pushed. And, of course, the passengers in the car hit that Jeep Cherokee that,
right.
you know, Juan Alvarez had put out there. By the way, remember, he just got sentenced like a week or two ago.
Yeah, he's
11 consecutive life terms. That judge was, he gave him everything he could give him and also, you know, let him have it too verbally in court.
Good. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, look, it was a dumb thing for him to do. I mean, if you want to kill yourself, fine, but don't take 11 people out with
well,
you.
Well, you know, one of the things the judge said to him, the judge looked right at him and says, I don't believe for 1 minute that you were trying to take your own life.
Wow.
He says, I don't buy that for 1 minute. He says, what you were doing is you were trying to get back in the good graces of your family, and you thought, oh, I jumped from the car, and blah, 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 you know, and you thought your family was going to wrap their arms around you.
Yeah.
He says, well, guess what? He says, I love the judge. He said, they're not going to have a chance.
Well, thank God that it wasn't Judge Ito. The guy would have had a new car and a house in Beverly Hills.
Exactly.
You know? But now, so they're going to be working all night on this thing, and it's amazing to see these firefighters, man. They get in there, and they're risking their own lives. I think two or three, or at least one firefighter was pulled out of that wreck after he injured himself.
You know, it's such a delicate situation, because what they're trying to do is remove that debris inside that first car, you know, the one that's on its side that's so badly damaged. You know, it's a dangerous situation in there, you know, sharp metal objects. And if you remove something, what are the consequences of removing that? In fact, I know that they brought in an engineer who understands the design of these coaches and engines as well.
Right.
And they brought him on site to help them determine what they could and couldn't do just to protect their safety. But the interesting thing is, in fact, a woman from L.A. Fire and L.A. County Fire told us that they specifically trained for this, that they have specifically trained for, like, this Metrolink disaster, so that these firefighters, these first responders, know exactly what to do. She said it may look chaotic. She said this on our air. It may look chaotic to your viewers, but she said, trust me, it is well orchestrated, and they are moving along, she says, in spite of inherent danger they're facing, she says, at a very rapid rate.
Oh, yeah. You know, I know that you and I both work for CBS, you know, to fully disclose that. But I got to give it to you guys at Channel 2 and also KNX 1070. From the moment that started, you guys went commercial free and you lost an hour of prime time and, you know, the revenue that that generates to bring the community the latest on this. And that's what, you know, community television and radio is all about.
Yeah, well, there won't be a holiday party.
Yeah, right. Yeah, there'd be nothing.
There's no money left.
Yeah, but I mean that's a great service. I mean,
anyway, thank you. I appreciate that. And in fact, what we're going to do tomorrow is we're going to begin our coverage at 6 a.m. again.
Yeah, when you guys, I noticed at 6:30 when you didn't go on the national news, I'm like, oh, these guys are going to be there all night, man.
Yeah.
But now I know a lot of people are wondering, you know, about the injured and the hospitals they went to, and I know they went to Cedar Sinai, I guess Northridge Hospital or Mission Hills Hospital.
Yeah, also UCLA. Gosh, they're
airlifting people out of there?
Yeah, they do. Oh, absolutely. In fact, you know, they set up their triage center right there in that little grassy park right there.
Right.
And if you remember the view from overhead, people who were on these sort of red blankets or had red sort of blankets wrapped around them, those were the most critical. And then if your injury is less than that, that's called delay status. You know, perhaps you can't help yourself, so you're going to need some attention, but you don't have to go right to critical care. They had those people in yellow. And then you move from yellow to white, which is, you know, slightly injured, but you're somewhat ambulatory.
So I guess that is organized.
Yeah, very organized. Mm-hmm. And they had that laid out just like that. And you could see that from the air. So all those people in the red, they took all the news media choppers and kicked them up to a much higher ceiling, so that they could get L.A. City fire helicopters in there, LAPD helicopters in there, L.A. County fire helicopters in there, L.A. County Sheriff's helicopters in there. And several times Gary Lineberry said, you know, because he's got that vantage point of being way up high, he said they're doing a trick. He says one takes off, one lands. And some of those helicopters, they were loading two people into because they had the space for it. Others, they were simply loading one. But something like 8 to 10 people went to UCLA. Half a dozen or more went to Cedars. Providence, Holy Cross is in double digits, Northridge, you know, all the little hospitals right there, and the larger ones in that area as well. They went into trauma mode, and they never want to overload one hospital with too many people, so they via computer, they're constantly on top of what emergency room is receiving how many people so that they don't overwhelm the staff inside right. that one particular emergency room.
Paul Majors is with us. Now, Paul, do you remember, I think it was, I don't know who did the interview, I think it was Lisa, but out in Moore Park, where they interviewed the girl who had a 19-year-old sister.
Oh, yeah, 19-year-old college sister.
Is she still missing?
Yeah, she is.
Oh, buddy.
I know.
Jesus, coming home for the, baptism
tomorrow morning,
yeah.
Her nephew's baptism. And I felt so badly for her sister because one of the things her sister just sort of said as an aside is that her younger sister, who she hasn't seen in a while, is just doing so well in life.
Hmm.
You know,
oh, man.
That's a horrible situation.
Well, I hope everybody says a prayer for her.
Yeah, your prayers go out to them, don't they?
She's out at the hospital and just can't get a hold of her family or something.
We gave her every number that you could possibly call. You know, they had a public unification center, which is open right now. That's at Chatsworth High School over on DeSoto in Devonshire.
Yeah.
And there's a number for that one. I'm sure it's on your wires over there. Frankly, I don't have it in front of me right now.
Well, I have the main number, the main hotline for family and friends.
From Metrolink? Yeah, that's a good number to give out, too, that 800 number.
Yeah, 1-800-371-5465. 1-800-371-5465. Well, Paul, we'd love to check in with you maybe on Monday and, you know, see what the latest is.
All right. And then let's do it another time under happier circumstances.
Yes, and I think we'll be stopping by KCAL on October
8th. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah,
we'll get you over here.
Yeah, much better circumstances.
All right, sir.
All right, you have a nice weekend. Take
you
care of yourself. All right, there he goes. Paul Majors, everybody. You can get the latest information tonight on Channel 2. And Channel 9 is covering it right now. KCAL is covering it right now, and there's a breaking news conference going on right now on Channel 9. And we come back, a little open phone, something a little lighter for the rest of the week here. So anything you'd like to talk about, anything you missed this week, anything you want to talk about, anything, any comments you have to make, you like the show, you hate the show, you hate Randy, you can't stand Randy, you wish, oh, I'm sorry, buddy. 520-90, you just gave me a finger and it wasn't a thumbs up, everybody. 520-9710, 888-520-9710, it is the Tim Conway Jr. Show. See if I can hit this post. Live on 97.1 Free FM. Out here in the fields, I fight for my meals. I get my back into my living. I don't need to fight to prove.